Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The Big Chief with a badge, a cattle prod and a head on a stick.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. This morning, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to tackle the thorny issue of immigration. Is it good? Is it bad? Does it work? Is it the cause of all our woes? If you listen to some people, you'd think immigration was dreamed up by someone who wanted to destroy our identity and our communities in this country. Others say the country and its economy would collapse without it. Surely the answer is somewhere in between. Today, the Migration Advisory Committee is telling us that EU immigration hasn't hurt the country at all. I don't agree with them. They say it hasn't become any more difficult to get a job because of it. Can that possibly be true? We want to hear from you this morning on the front line of the jobs market. Has the EU honestly hurt your chances of success and getting a better job? And will you be better off after Brexit in whatever business you are in? Genuinely, we want to hear from you this morning. 0344 499 1000. Coming up, we'll be bringing you the shock news of the day. Apparently, Bert and Ernie aren't gay. Plus, we'll explain how Dawn Neeson managed to get my picture in the Daily Star today. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, and Dawn Neeson on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, we talk about gender equality an awful lot on this show.
We do.
And sometimes it can get a bit heated. Sometimes, like when we had a female comedian on last week saying that the iPhone was too small for women's hands.
Too big for women's hands.
It all got a bit out of control. But let's talk to Nicola Thorpe, because this is a much more serious story for me. It's not one of those where you say, do you know what? Women are just being stupid or men are just being stupid. This is genuinely worrying. If basically two-thirds of 13 to 21-year-old girls in this country say that they feel unsafe walking home alone, they feel that the world in which they live is terribly sexist and anti-women, it's a really worrying statistic. Nicola, very good morning to you. Welcome.
Morning.
Good morning to you too.
Thanks very much for joining us, Nicola. I mean, it's slightly worrying. I mean, I've got a daughter who's a bit older than that now, so, you know, maybe it doesn't apply to her. But if you're a parent, you must be really concerned about what kind of world we're creating here.
Yeah, of course you're going to be concerned. And I wouldn't even say that it's down to you know, teenage girls or anything like that. I'm 30 next week, and I carry a rape alarm with me at night time because of I'd been followed home on multiple occasions. You know, starting when I was probably like a teenager, and then even going, you know, growing up. And last time I think it was a few years ago, I got followed to my garden by a man on the way home. And I'm not saying that that's happening to every woman. I think speaking to most of my friends, we've all got experiences of some creepy guy following us or saying something abusive in the street or whatever. I just think women are now more aware of it happening and they are more likely to report it, which is the right thing to do. And that's why we're seeing a kind of surge in women's awareness of this kind of harassment and feeling unsafe.
Yeah, and I mean, is it, as far as you're aware, something that's relatively recent? I mean, is this, because I mean, there's an argument that people make sometimes that the more, and I read a piece by Charlotte Gill in the Times the other day, the more that we try to sort of insist on equality, and I don't mean that therefore equality is a bad thing, but the more that we sort of insist on equality, the more kind of difficult it becomes, if you like, because the gender differences in men and women come out more, and sometimes they come in ways which are not very nice.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Inherently, sometimes there are absolutely differences between men and women, and equality is not about treating men and women exactly the same. It's about treating them with an equal amount of respect, opportunities, etc. And I think that the more people become aware of it, it can be quite confusing. And I know there was another report brought out this morning about girls feeling more less happy
at
school, and a bit confused. And I think I really get that, because, you know, when I grew up, it was all about being blonde and big boobs with a skinny waist. And now we're having all these different kind of body types shown to us, not just in mainstream media, but on social media. And on one hand, they've got, you know, people, we've got like razor adverts to shave your legs. And then other clothing campaigns, there's women who've got body hair. And it's kind of like, oh, God, we're in the teenage girls now who are growing up are in this quite exciting, I think, phase of there being a revolutionary change in how we treat women. But unfortunately, they're the kind of first generation of guinea pigs, and I can imagine it's quite difficult, particularly with them, if their mums are like, you know, feel one thing, but their peers might feel another. I can imagine it'd be very confusing.
See, that's a really good point that nobody has, to my mind, ever made before, because we hear all the time that there's an awful lot of pressure on young girls and young boys as well, particularly with the social media problem with Instagram and WhatsApp and all of that, and the stories that you have to put out every day to see how many likes you can get. But nobody's actually pointed out, as you have, Nicola, there, that there are an awful lot of different kind of images that you can aspire to be, and that must be a bit confusing.
Yeah, very confusing. And I mean, I'm a feminist, and I believe that, you know, I'm about as hardcore in that sense, although I don't think it's hardcore.
That sounds very hardcore.
It does sound quite hardcore. But I've also had my legs lasered, do you know what I mean? And I went there and I'm like, God, I'm paying money to be put in quite a lot of pain so I don't have to shave my legs anymore. Am I a bad feminist?
Does that work forever, that, by the way?
It does, yeah, it's permanent.
Because, you know, I only found this out the other day, right? And apropos of nothing, sorry to change the subject slightly.
That's
if you get your eyes lasered, apparently you have to get them done again, because all it does is kind of keep them in a state in which they were in, but in fact they can still deteriorate. So maybe the hair will grow back, you never know.
You know what? It wouldn't surprise me. But, you know, I grew up, and I remember I started shaving my legs at 7.
Nicola, the point.
That's a bit hairy, girl.
The point of feminism is that every woman has the right to choose whether she wants to get her legs done or not. That's proper feminism. You have the right to choose how you live your life, what job you want to do. Exactly. And I find it very interesting that the proportion of girls who say they're very unhappy has halved in a decade, which is almost exactly the same at the time as social media is growing. So the more these girls are on social media, the unhappier they're becoming. And yet it's these girls, as you say, they are the forefront of this. So they are the sort of like, you know, the experimental ones. But they're posting all these pictures themselves as well. And I find it quite shocking that some of the pictures they post on there, it's like, you know, oh, no, don't do that. You're going to regret that in years to come. But there's this constant competition between all the young girls to, you know, post the sexiest picture, the sort of look at my lifestyle picture. And it's going to make, it makes everyone feel inferior, not just other youngsters.
Yeah, I mean, like 10 years ago, I would never have posted a selfie. I would have thought, oh, my God, how self-centered.
Yeah,
how,
absolutely.
Like, narcissistic.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, hey, I'm just doing this and here's a selfie. And you go through a kind of a change. You're affected by what's going on around you, aren't you? So people feel like it's more acceptable and they can do this or they can do that. But like I said before, there are so many different images which women are aspiring to, which is a great thing. But it can be really confusing depending on what's acceptable in your social circle, your family circle, and kind of your community.
Yeah. And as Mike mentioned earlier on, I mean, this is a survey, by the way, by the Girls Attitude Survey from the Girl Guiding UK. And it does paint a worrying picture of young girls. I mean, they're sort of like, you know, age 7 to 21, these girls, obviously. And I think the more we have this whole hashtag Me Too generation, I don't want to keep coming back to that, but I think it has got a little bit out of control now. And the sex is... I think the sexes are sort of feeling increasingly confused about how to react around one another, and I think this is a lot to do with the girls not feeling safe.
The reason that the sexes feel like they don't know how to react to each other is because they've been kind of enlightened into something that had happened that women have known about for a long time, and men were generally speaking quite clueless about, unless they were perpetrators of this kind of harassment.
But we're talking about younger men as well, who really shouldn't have that sort of like that whole Harvey Weinstein attitude from the 70s. And I do think there is confusion now. I mean, I think that's why girls are feeling more vulnerable, because to a certain extent, they're almost making themselves become victims by sort of like subscribing to, well, I am a victim, so therefore I'm going to behave like a victim. And I do find that a bit worrying.
Yeah, that's worrying. That's not a worrying part of the Me Too campaign. That is down to people not being spoken to about it properly by their educators or parents. And actually, it's really very clear what is and isn't harassment. And at the end of the day, my rule of thumb is, if somebody says no or someone says it makes them feel comfortable, don't deny them that experience. Just say, OK, fine. And leave it.
Yeah,
but actually, Nicola, you're absolutely right, and you're very clearly straight on this, and I think you've probably made more sense on this subject than anyone we've ever spoken to on this show, because I can tell you this, it is not very clear for an awful lot of women where harassment begins and ends, because I've read many, many pieces in many, many different publications in which people say, you know, you're being harassed if somebody's wolf whistling at you. I would never wolf whistle at a woman in my life, okay? That's never something I would do. However, you know, is that harassment? I mean, is it harassment really? Is somebody kind of saying something to you in the street harassment? You know, lots of different people have lots of different views.
Because they're all unique, and you cannot flatly saying XYZ is constant, it will always be considered harassment. It depends on context.
Yeah.
And this is what people are forgetting. It depends on subtext, it depends on context, and that's what's confusing. At the end of the day, someone whistles at me in the street, I, you know, I'm not going to think anything of it. But if it's a group of men and they're leering and they're wolf whistling and other, you know, that feels threatening. Or if I'm alone at night, it's all about context. It's not black and white. But at the end of the day, there's not, I'm sick of people saying, oh, it's PC gone mad, whatever. It's not. It's actually really nice manners. Not harassing somebody is actually just being a polite, decent human being, which is...
No, I totally agree with you. But, you know, if I speak to a woman on the tube in some context or other, because we're just having a conversation, there are some women who will say, that's harassment, you know? And I know that it's not. I know that it's not.
You know,
but what I'm saying is that I'm, you know, I'm old enough to know better. But, you know, there may be younger men who are confused, as Dawn says.
Sure, but if you did strike up a conversation with a woman on the tube and she was giving you a lot of signals to say, leave me alone, I don't want to talk, and you pursued that, that, I would say, was harassment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Sure.
So, I mean, it's...
It might not be what you do, but you have to think, okay, let me just put myself in the woman's shoes.
No, yes, listen, absolutely.
Every 10 minutes.
Absolutely, but what I'm saying is, when we're still discussing something that you said, everybody kind of knows where harassment starts and ends. And the point is, we don't.
We don't. Okay, but the woman, for the person receiving it, I'm fairly sure that when they say no, and then it's pursued, that's harassment. But that's not to say that it's down to the woman to always say no. Men and women should be more cautious about how they approach other human beings.
It is about treating one another with respect, isn't it? And the one thing I did find positive about this survey, Nicola, is the fact that most of these girls do identify as feminists now, which is a good thing.
Cameron couldn't even say he was a feminist. I mean, less about...
But I mean, the one thing I did find interesting as well is that more girls, and these are 7 to 10 year olds, think the way people treat girls and women is affected by naked pictures of women in the media. Now, obviously, I edited a tabloid for 15 years and we did have Page Three Girls. Now, as a feminist, I back women who want to go and work as Page Three Girls to do that. That's their right. But I do find it confusing as an older woman who would be very wary about what I put on social media, that these are the same generation of girls who are posting all sorts of pictures on social media of themselves and then complaining about women who choose to go and work as a Page Three girl. It's a mixed message there.
10-year-olds complaining about Page Three girls. I don't think Page Three.
That's what this survey says. Compared to three girls.
Seeing images,
More girls aged 7 to 10 think,
it's more insightful than you think. I think it suggests that maybe that they see that the reason why they are doing it themselves is because that's how they see older people doing it. Not just celebrities, not just people in the media, just probably their older cousins, their older, even their aunties, maybe their grandparents, you know, are posting photos of that ilk on social media. So they just see it as being normal. And at that age as well, everybody is so completely different. You're going through various different stages of puberty. You might have boobs or not have boobs or whatever, and that can be really, really, really confusing. But we need to be talking about it so that young girls know that. I posted a photo of my stretch marks the other day. I'm not a kid, but I have stretch foot marks on my bum and they look like I've been struck by lightning. And I was sat in my pants at home just looking at them. I was like, do you know what? I'm going to post a photo of that because maybe there are other women who have the same thing on their bum.
I don't think you're a bit of an exhibitionist.
Nicola, you're braver than me.
I mean,
well, you couldn't see anything else. You could just see the stretch marks. It looked really cool. It looked like lightning strikes. People sharing that kind of thing as well.
Well, that's the world we live in now, isn't it? I mean, it's very, very bizarre.
Everybody overshares
everything.
But I'll
tell you what, when I take my son to school occasionally, when I'm down there to do so, the girls who go to the school, he's about 14, right? The girls that are going to that school with him, I mean, you would think it was London Fashion Week, seriously.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, they're wearing a uniform, but they've got, you know, their hair is beautifully coiffured. Uh-huh. They've all got designer. They've all got designer handbags. They've all got sort of, you know, what look like very unsensible shoes on. You know, they're, I mean, if they were not wearing school uniform, I would have no idea how old they are, but they're probably only about 14.
Mm.
That's not a new idea, though.
No, I know it's not. I'm not saying it is, but you know, that's the sort of the young women that I see, you know, of young teenage girls who are absolutely all about the glamour.
Well, then it's not the girls' fault, is it?
Well,
no,
I don't know.
Of course not.
The boys aren't doing the same. So that's why I find
I don't know. My son spends quite a lot of time in front of the mirror quaffing his hair in the morning.
But
you know,
the irony is obviously this is the Girl Guiding UK the survey is from, but I think more and more young boys are being affected by these sort of attitudes as well.
I really have a theory about that, which is that the less and less women care about their appearance, the more that these companies and brands need to target men.
Targeting
to
boys.
Try and make their sales.
It's interesting, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, they've all got gel in their hair nowadays.
Yes.
But I mean, if you were to see the girls going to this school, you would not think that they're not dressing up, honestly. I mean, it doesn't seem like that to me.
But they're allowed to. They're feminists, are allowed to wear what they want as long as it goes with the school uniform.
Well, no, they're not. Sorry, they're children, actually. They're not allowed to wear what they want. They can't walk to school in a bikini.
Uniform, as long as they're in the school uniform, I said, Mike.
What does that say about us as like a society trying to make these women look older and that somehow that their being over 18 is what gives them value and worth?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I blame the parents, as I normally do.
He blames parents for everything.
Well, I do, because if you've got children, you know, you're supposed to be somebody who teaches them how to be. You don't have to make them in your image, but, you know.
Sure, but it's really hard if you want to send your daughter to school and she's like, look, Mum, Dad, I'm going to get bullied if I don't wear this, that and the other. Like, they have to.
Well, then surely you teach them how not to be bullied, don't you?
Exactly.
Yeah,
you don't go, oh, well, that's fine, just wear whatever you like then in order not to be bullied. That's crazy.
Then you might possibly punch the person that's trying to bully you and end up in more trouble yourself.
Yeah, it's
not that that's a personal experience.
Still better to punch them than to be bullied.
No, I totally agree. Absolutely.
For yourselves. I feel like as kids, when we were kids, we just, well, our parents dressed us, right? Then when we were teenagers, as women, we dressed to impress boys. I only ever thought of, like, a clothes to be something to make myself more attractive.
Mm.
And then I hit sort of my mid-20s and was like, oh my God, I can wear my own clothes now for the first time in my life and not care. Isn't that a really cool thing? And I want teenagers to be able to do that as well.
I think teenagers are always going to be teenagers, though, and teenage girls.
Are.
We're never going to stop them doing what, you know, rolling their skirts up so they're shorter.
And maybe, how about this? Maybe, just maybe, it's kind of in now to be unhappy. So when you get asked by somebody who's doing, hang on, when somebody's asking you if you're happy or not, you don't want to say you're happy in front of your friends because actually they might think it's too ridiculous.
It's slightly edgy to have issues these days, isn't it? So to be,
you can imagine them being interviewed. Like, actually, I'm on a scale of 1 to 10. I'm kind of a melancholic 6, actually.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. I think I've hit on yet another great theory. But listen, Nicola, lovely to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed for being so sensible, Nicola Thorpe, actress, women's equality campaigner.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Somebody ringing a bell, someone's knocking at the door, somebody's ringing the bell, do me a favor, open the door, let them in.
03444991000 is the number to call us on. This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. That song's been ruined for me by that bloody postcode lottery advert.
Oh yeah, you know, irritating.
You know, I can't listen to it anymore.
No, it's very...
It makes me think of all those Welsh people.
Yeah, there's a whole list of songs I've got,
you know,
like that now.
I don't
now.
Know why they seem to always do adverts about people in Wales winning it, but I guess that's the postcode in question. There was another advert I saw last night which annoyed the hell out of me as well, but we'll come to that later on. We're asking you this morning about whether immigration has really altered your life, whether it has actually damaged it in some way, whether it's made your ability to get a job more difficult, because I don't really think that's the case. But I think we have to be very careful about listening to people like these independent migration advisory committee types who are telling us that, you know, every immigrant that comes to this country from the EU is a net contributor to the economy, because I'm sure that they can't possibly know that.
Well, they seem to have the facts that back that up, but as you know, with facts and statistics...
Well, you know me, I'm not a great believer in statistics, to be honest.
No, they might not always be 100% accurate.
Yeah. I mean, I've got some great tweets here. Kevin says, I've worked with three Romanian boys, lovely fellas. They shared one room paying £90 a week and they sent all their money home. How is that helping the British economy? Well, you may well ask, and I mean, it may well be that they're paying tax, it may well be that they're not.
Yeah.
Because we all know in certain industries in this country, for example, the building trade, the restaurant trade, you know, the delivery trade, if you like. I mean, these are all jobs that you can be paid cash to do, and nobody's paying any tax at all.
Yes, and we don't know how many people are actually doing that in this country, because we haven't been able to keep track of those type of bills. But there are an awful lot of people over here who are, like Dimitri, who are working, are paying their taxes, paying their dues, and contributing to the economy.
Yeah, of course. I mean, if you think about your daily sort of, you know, doings, the things that you do on a daily basis, right? Whatever it is, whether you're getting on a bus, which may be driven by somebody who's an immigrant, whether you get on a tube that may be being driven by somebody who's an immigrant, you go to a sandwich shop to get your bacon roll in the morning, maybe cooked by somebody who's an immigrant, you know, you go to the pub later on, you're going to be served by somebody who's an immigrant, you go to a restaurant later on after that, you go to a shop. You know, there's all sorts of people
especially
who, if you kick them out, are not going to, those businesses are going to disappear.
Well, what's going to happen? I mean, if you live in a big city, that's often the case. I mean, you can, as you say, go about your ordinary morning business and not bump into another English person, in whatever English people are these days.
Yeah, right.
But a lot of foreigners, which is fine. And as you say, if we boot all these people out all of a sudden, the economy has to collapse.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the thing that I have a problem about as well is the idea that it's all very well saying immigration is a great thing, but if you're going to invite 3 million European Union immigrants here, and we haven't even counted yet the numbers that have come in from other parts of the world, you've got to build more schools, you've got to build more hospitals, you've got to build more roads. You know, you've got to make the infrastructure capable of handling an extra few thousand, possibly millions of people.
Well, so therefore we need probably more migrants to come in to help build those houses
roads. Maybe so, but the point is they're not being built.
No.
Theresa May this morning is outlining details of a new £2 billion social housing programme, right? But of course, what you'll get from that is people saying, well, hang on a second, isn't that social housing supposed to be for people in this country? Why are you giving it away to anybody else?
Well, a lot of these migrants have been living in this country for a long time. Why shouldn't they get social housing?
Let's go to the phones. 03444991000. Immigration, good or bad? Here's David in Corby. Hello, David.
Hello.
Hi, David.
Hi, what would you like to tell us, David?
Well, basically, I think immigration generally is a positive thing for the UK. And the way I say that is because, first of all, I'd like to say that I'm a local politician.
Are you?
And that, yes, I'm from the Conservative Party, so don't hang me for that.
Well, why would I do that?
I don't
still
know.
Democracy, as far as I know. Don't think it's a hanging offence yet.
Okay, it was only a joke. My effort at a joke. But basically, I'm married a Slovakian.
Okay.
And that, and if it wasn't for immigration, I would never have met her. And that, now the interesting thing is that when she first came to this country, she comes from a quite well-off family in Slovakia, so wasn't poor by any stretch of the imagination. But she'd just gone through a heavy divorce, so she decided to start a new life and came to Corby. And when she first came to Corby, the first thing she says, why are all the criminals here from Slovakia?
Interesting.
And that, it was a bit of a shock for her at the time.
Right.
And that, she's worked hard here, got on for us. She's been here now for just over 11 years. And that... And got herself a good job and always worked. But what I would say to you is that most immigrants, not all of them, there's good and bad in every society and every organisation, but generally speaking, they have a good work effort. You know, they want to work hard, and some of them play hard. When they first came to this country, a lot of Polish people, for example, and that they have a different sort of culture from what we have. And they tended to drink a lot, but they tend to be young men.
Yeah.
And someone mentioned it before in your program about the economic leak, where they sent a lot of their money back to their own country.
Yes.
Mm. And that, which was very, very true. But if you look at it now, it's very, very different. A lot of them are families now. And also there's integration, like myself, who have married an Eastern European. So it's a lot, lot different. And
it is a lot different, but there's still good and bad, as you quite rightly say, David. And the thing is that what I would like to see is the politicians of this country, Tories, Labour, whoever they may be, actually admitting the fact that not all immigration is good, though. Because, you know, yes, you can have bad apples, but we've got enough of our own homegrown bad apples. We don't need to import them, really. And also, we need to seriously think about building more schools, more hospitals, more facilities with more people coming into the country. And nobody seems to be saying that.
Mm.
Well, I absolutely agree with you. Infrastructure is extremely important. But yes, you pointed out democracy earlier on in our conversation. Yes, we live in a democratic country. Absolutely true. And I wouldn't have it any other way. But also, democracy can have its ups and downs. Now, politicians, if you've got a career politician, I'm talking from my own experience here as well. Mm. Politicians only, they rightly so in some respects, in that trying put across what the people want that they're representing,
right.
And you know, but they're only there for they'll only do somehow what they think. Doesn't matter what they get. If they want Brexit and they think Brexit, you know, is a good thing, that's fine. But a lot of the politicians, I believe, don't.
I don't think Theresa May wants Brexit.
No,
one second.
No, I think you're absolutely right. Do you want Brexit, David?
No, I don't want Brexit. I'm a Remainer, but
okay.
I'll tell you that I was a Eurosceptic long before the referendum.
Right.
And people think I changed my mind because I married a Slovakian wife, which is absolutely not true. What happened was I decided not to become a career politician. I changed my views.
Mm.
And so therefore, that made me... An area I live in is so... The demographics are not that high, although it's improving, and that really support Brexit. And that, so therefore, if I want to be have a political career... I'd have to support that view.
Mm.
And I believe that's what some of the politicians do. So they're just thinking about their own selves, about where they're going to be in the future, not about what's good for the country.
David, can I just ask you a personal question? Has your wife taken British citizenship?
No, she hasn't at the moment, but that's what she wants to do.
Right. And are you concerned that if we don't get if we get a no-deal Brexit, what will happen to her? I mean, is there any chance that she could get thrown back out of the country?
I don't think that will happen, to be honest. And I don't.
Well, I hope it doesn't. But...
No, I hope it doesn't as well. Because if she wasn't welcome here, then I wouldn't be either. I'd go.
No, of course. Mm-hmm. David, listen, we've got to go now as well. Thanks very much indeed. David from Corby there, who's married to a Slovakian. 0344 499 1000. He says immigration has made his life better. Has it made your life better? We want to know. 0344 499 1000. This is Talk Radio.
Wake up, Maggie. I think I got something to say to you. It's late September and I really should be back at school. I know I keep you amused, but I feel I'm real.
tried anymore.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. 0344 499 1000 is the number. We've got a great tweet here. No, is it a tweet? Yes, it is, from Linda, who says, how about this? Listening from our sun loungers in lovely Crete by our private pool, loving the Me Too feature. My daughter's 22, is a snowflake and a feminist, and I'm alarmed that a robust old bird like me has raised such a delicate flower.
Well, that's part of what I'm saying. I think that women are now creating themselves to be victims.
Yeah.
I really do. And I just, it frightens me, because when they get out there in the real world, it's not all nice. You're not all to be looked after.
But you say that, but of course the real world has changed quite a lot, hasn't it?
It is changing.
I mean, the real world, when you entered it, right, as a young reporter, aged, whatever, 21, 22, working for a tabloid newspaper in what was a very, very rough industry in those days. I mean, it's very different now. I mean, you've just...
It is very different.
I mean, I'm not going to say you've left the business, because you still write a column. And we're going to talk about the column, which is in the Daily Star today. Page 17, if you haven't seen it, get your hands on it, because it's got a great picture of me in it. Which is not least of the reasons why you should be reading it. But I mean, the industry has changed.
It
for
has
the
changed.
Probably for the better in some ways.
It has changed for the better.
In some ways.
Yes.
But in other ways, not so much.
But
because
it's still, like most businesses, it's still not, there aren't safe spaces. People aren't going to tiptoe around your feelings.
No.
People will tell you like it is. And I did, there was a piece in one of the papers today about lawnmower parents. Have you heard of this?
Well, you know, I saw that line. I didn't know what a lawnmower parent
was.
Yeah,
well, basically, it means you are so overprotective, as that texter said, you're so overprotective of your youngsters that you are creating a path for them to get sort of like, you know, from childhood to being a young adult with no obstacles, no upsets in their way.
Right.
So you sort of like...
And also they don't learn how to do anything,
do
they?
No, they don't. And then they are creating a sort of like wrapped in cotton wool. And it's you're doing a huge disservice to that child, whether it's a boy or a girl, by making everything so easy for them. Mm. They have to stand on their own 2 feet. They have to
understand. I think it's a very middle-class thing, because I think what has happened over the years, and we were talking about, you know, the working classes and immigration earlier on, saying that maybe the working classes reflect the way that they feel about immigration, because they're the ones that maybe get affected mostly by it.
Yeah, absolutely.
In terms of the job sector that they work in terms of the parts of cities that they live in, that kind of thing. But, I mean, you know, there is definitely a sort of an expanded middle class now. You know, everybody wants to be middle class, and so many more people are middle class. And those are the parents who kind of overprotect their kids,
overprotect the kids. But, I mean, that's why the column today is all about the class issue. And obviously there have been two recent things. Obviously the horrific Rees-Mogg incident. Where
that ghastly Ian Bone figure.
Yeah, the anarchist, whatever he is, who was abusing Rees-Mogg's kids. No matter what you think of Rees-Mogg or his politics, you don't shout abuse at a six-year-old kid on the way to school.
No, but again, this is sort of tantamount to the world we live in, isn't it? Because we talk about this all the time. That, you know, you are polarised one way or another now. And I won't say the B words, and they don't like it. But that's kind of affected everybody about everything.
It has. It does colour everything, every single view on everything now. And then also you have Kerris Matthews, who presents a radio show on something I've never even heard of and wouldn't listen to, because I'm always listening to talk radio because it's brilliant.
Yeah.
And she was banning posh boy bands because she didn't want to encourage... Basically, anyone that had a leg up in life by being
like James
privately
Blunt.
Educated.
I mean, I'm all for banning James Blunt. But, well, I mean, he's actually very funny on Twitter.
Yeah, no, he is very funny. And she banned Lily Allen as well.
I don't mind banning her.
No, she's banned no matter
what. She's blocked me on Twitter.
No matter what working class, middle class, upper class. In any case, Kerris is also privately educated.
So,
which I loved. It's like, hold on a minute, love. And, you know, at the end of the day, why do you have to dictate which school people go to?
Matter?
I said, well, you just play the music.
Yeah.
Why don't you just do that? But no, she was on a class high horse, despite being in exactly the same bracket as the privileged people she was having a go at.
And of course, even more amusingly, what you then see, as I saw following that particular sort of Twitter spat that was going on, because Piers Morgan was having a go about it, and I think she was having a go back.
Yep.
Various people were saying, and isn't it typical for these kind of entitled, you know, privileged people to moan when something doesn't go their way? Well, I'm sorry, it's not something not going your way. It's a totally ridiculous and arbitrary decision that's been made by some woman who, as you say, was herself privately educated, former junkie, right, who decides she's going to ban people from the radio.
Yeah, it's just, you know...
It's astonishing.
She is paid to play music. That's all I want her to do.
Yeah.
I don't want your politics, love. Just put a record on so I can listen to it.
Yeah. Also, it's a bit of poacher turned gamekeeper, isn't it? I'm never in favour of people who play music actually doing radio shows and playing music.
No.
They should be out there making more music, shouldn't
they?
Instead of keeping people away from jobs in the radio industry.
I think, Mike, that her music might not be as popular as it once was anymore, which is possibly...
Yes.
why she's over here taking our jobs.
Do you know, she once cancelled an event because of me, down in Wales, where she comes from, she'd had a bit of trouble. Castelloni were quite a big band at the time.
Absolutely, of course.
And they were part of that whole Cool Cymru thing that was going on, you know, with the Manic Street Preachers and all the other Welsh bands that were around at the time. And but she disappeared from view because it turned out that she had a problem with drugs,
which she admitted later on.
And she was coming out of that, and she decided to have a sort of a talk she was going to do somewhere. I think it was at Celtic Manor, the hotel.
She was selling
tickets for, and it wasn't a music show. It was going to be her talking about herself and all this. And we were running the Welsh edition of The Mirror at the time, so we basically sort of tried to muscle in it.
Of course, as you would do, as a good journalist.
She found out that we'd got some tickets, and she cancelled the event. She cancelled
Why?
It. Didn't instead of saying you can't come. She just cancelled it.
Well, what about all the people that had brought tickets in good faith?
Well, they had to get their money back.
Oh, for God's sake.
I mean, she's clearly been a bit of a snowflake even before snowflakes were invented.
She invented snowflakes. But what I'm confused about with both of these stories is class. What is class these days? Why are we all so still obsessed with it? And does your class come from where you were born and how you're brought up? Or the life you live now?
Well, I think it's about where you are now. Because that's why I always have an argument with you and anyone who claims to be working class.
Yeah, I disagree. I think it's where you come from and how you're brought up.
Yeah, but class is a mobility thing, surely. Because you can never become upper class, really.
No.
Because for that, you need to be born into some kind of landed gentry scenario.
Yes.
And we've spoken about this before.
Yeah.
When you meet people like that, and we've both met them in the newspaper business, you know, you could be friends with people who are sort of upper class.
Yeah, but you're never
part of their world.
No.
You know, they will never really be friends with you properly.
No.
Because they're only, it's like people like the Boris Johnsons of this world. You know, if you didn't go to Eton, he doesn't really want to know you.
I'm quite glad about that, actually. Thank you very much. You're probably a bad example to pick. Yeah.
But I think there's absolutely every possibility that you become middle class, having been working class. For example, my parents, right, both born very working class in Glasgow. My dad's dad was had various jobs. He was a railway policeman for a while. He fought in the First World War. He looked after horses. Mm-hmm. You know, he never did anything which was other than working class.
Yeah.
My mother, the same. Her dad was a boilermaker from a place called Renfrew. But they both moved to London. My dad became a graphics designer for a newspaper. Mm-hmm. My mother was a teacher. Mm-hmm. Very middle class jobs. They lived in a very middle class part of Hampstead. I was brought up very middle class. Mm. So I'm middle class, and so are they. Even though my dad's now dead.
I would describe your parents as middle class.
Yeah.
But your background and upbringing is middle. Your parents are working class.
No.
But your background is middle class.
No, because they lived a middle class life.
Yeah, but their backgrounds and their core values are from that working class background.
No, see, I disagree with that. I don't think your values are any different no matter what class you're from. That is to do with your parenting, and that is to do with the person that you are. You're not. You see, that sort of feeds into this nonsense that, you know, the working class are all salt of the earth types.
No, I don't agree with that.
They're not. You don't get given value just because of your class.
Okay, Mike, then what class would you describe Wayne Rooney as?
Wayne Rooney is middle class.
Right.
Because he makes an awful lot of money and
so
he lives a very middle class life.
He's got a nice car, he's got a nice house.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say Wayne Rooney was middle class.
You cannot tell me that anyone who makes £250,000 a week is working class. Do me a favour.
Oh, yeah, but I'm sorry, I think he's working class. I just think he's got a nice car and a nice house.
Well, so you're effectively saying that being uneducated is like being working class. Is that what you're saying?
No. I'm just saying his core values, his background, were from that working class ethic.
Yeah, they might have been.
Whatever that is.
His parents might have been working
class. Yeah,
but I don't think he's middle class now. Of course he is.
No, he's not.
Well, what's his son? Kai.
Kai or Clay or whatever other ones are called.
Yeah.
I think they are probably being brought up in a middle class.
Right. So they've transitioned to middle class.
Yeah. Like you and your parents.
Yeah.
So I would say your parents had the working class background. You were brought up middle
class. So how come you,
the Rooneys,
have still retained your working class roots even though you have transitioned to middle class?
But I haven't. You're on TV. I'm saying my core.
You're on TV, you're on the radio. You edited a newspaper. How can you be working class?
You can be working class and be on the radio.
Really?
Of course you can.
No.
Of course you can.
How?
Why not?
You name me one working class person who's on the radio.
Me.
Is that anybody else? No.
I don't know that many people. Actually, Julia. Julia was pretty working class
on the background.
Julia,
I think if you told Julia Hartley Brewer she's working class, she'd slap you.
She went to an ordinary comprehensive school before she went to Oxford. Seriously.
Yeah, she went to Oxford.
Yeah.
She's not working class.
Well, she came from an ordinary school.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Makes no difference. I came from an ordinary school.
You're discriminating and you're saying that working class people can't work on TV and the radio.
I didn't say that.
No, you are. You said if you're on radio and TV, you can't be working class.
No, you're not working class. No, you're not because you're making money and you're in a job which is not a working class job. If you want to be working class, do a working class job.
Well, what's a working class job, Mike?
A working class job is a working class job. You know exactly
which
what it is.
Which is what? Go on.
Well, I'd say driving a bus would be a working class
job.
Right, okay. I would say working down a mine would be a working class job.
Right, okay.
I would say sweeping the streets is a working class job.
Uh-huh.
I would say being a hospital porter is a working class job.
Yeah, but middle class people do all those jobs as well.
Do they?
Yeah.
Like who?
Well,
you're going to tell me somebody's a middle class road sweeper?
Well, why not? Yeah, why
no,
not?
No, I think you're all confused.
Oh, that's discrimination. I'm not confused at all. I think
you need to write another column about
people,
this.
People, phone up here. Come on. What makes your class? Is it your background and the core values you're brought up with?
What, or what's
is
a it core just value?
Because you drive a posh car and live in a nice house and maybe talk on the radio. Come on.
I don't think you've got this one right.
Well, I do.
Well, give the number out. 0344 499.
I can't see the number
1000. Well, you should learn the number. You should have it ingrained in your head. 0344 499 1000. Now, when you were writing about you and I, which is hence the picture of me in the paper, which is my picture. Basically, we were talking about that great interview yesterday.
We were talking about that
from Cryonics UK.
Yes, which is the best interview you've ever done.
Mm. I think,
I say that on paper.
I think it was very funny.
It was
certainly
very funny.
One of the funniest.
And people are still talking about it now, which is good. And that's why I've written
about
it.
It's not a business, yes.
It's not a business. It's a charity, honestly. Yeah. And it was. And people are still going on about it. It's not a business, Mike.
Right.
It's not a business.
The bit that people mostly find the most amusing is the argument we had about whether the person involved is dead or not.
Yes.
Because he was claiming they're not dead.
I thought, despite being working class,
yeah.
I thought I had a fairly good grasp on being alive and being
and dead.
Dead.
Yeah. Well, you see, again, you're coming at me with this kind of inferiority complex. You don't have to feel inferior because you're working class.
I don't feel inferior to you, Mike.
I think you do.
No, I don't.
I think you've got a massive chip on your shoulder.
No, I don't feel inferior to you at all.
Do you feel inferior to anyone?
No.
You see?
No.
Can't be working class.
Yeah, working class. We're not inferior.
Let's talk to Sean, who's in Gosport. He's got something to say about it. Sean.
Hi, Sean.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Dawn.
Yeah, good afternoon to you.
Oh, blimey, yeah. Sorry,
that's a middle class thing to do is
Are
to
you?
Correct you there.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have done that, see?
Really? Oh, is that because of your core values?
Yeah, absolutely,
okay.
Yeah.
So, Sean, what do you consider yourself to be?
Blimey, I'd probably say I was working class. I mean, I grew up in a social home across the water there in Portsmouth, so most definitely be working class. I also consider that I don't earn the wages that the people at the top of society do, so I don't think they can really...
What about your job, though? Does your job not define you?
Well, not necessarily. I don't necessarily think the job's the deciding factor here. There's a lot to it. It's going to be your education, it's going to be your cultural values, your social norms. There's so much to what defines class.
But why would your social norms be any different if you're working class or middle class? I don't get that.
Because you may well have been brought up differently, Mike.
You're going to be another one of these chippy types who makes out that, oh, only the working class have got any morals. What a load of old cobblers.
No, it's not.
No, not at all. I don't think just because I've come from a certain background that my morals and beliefs and values are any different to yours.
Right, so you must be middle class then.
Sean, they probably are, by the way.
You must be middle class then.
No, definitely not. I think I'm one of these minions at the bottom of society just working away, basically.
We've got the violins out.
And that's pretty much it. But like I said, it's a fluid thing, and I don't agree with you about the money situation as well. I think if you're born into money, you've certainly got a better chance in life because social mobility at the moment is just so rubbish, basically.
I don't think that's true either.
Do you not?
No, I think social mobility is all down to the person who wants to be mobile or not.
You could argue that, but I think if you're born into it, so to say you've got access to private education from the get-go, you've got a better chance because you're going to be in smaller class sizes.
Yeah, maybe, but there's an awful lot of really useless private schools. I mean, you hear about the very good ones and you hear about the very expensive ones, but there's an awful lot of them which are not very good, which don't actually cost the earth, but are actually not worth really going to.
Yeah, but if I'm at a school with an average class size of around 25 kids compared to another school, for example, in the area, and they've got an average class size of 35, that particular teacher's going to have more
I'd stand to you, though, Sean. I'm a great believer in individualism and individuality, and I think if you complain about your lot in life because you went to a school that had 35 people instead of 25, then you're a dead loss to the world.
What do you do for a living, Sean?
I'm a help desk administrator. That's my official job title.
Help desk. It sounds middle class, that, to me.
It's got the word desk involved in
desk,
it, obviously.
It's got a desk.
Yes.
It's got administration. Do you have to wear a uniform?
No, I don't.
There's another one, right? There's another clue.
Right, okay.
I'm quite lucky. I work from home, so I don't have to go to the office.
Ah, there you go, you see. You got a computer?
Yes.
There you go.
Middle class, you're sorted, sure. You're officially middle class.
You can join the same club as Dornos, you know, sitting there middle class as you like, pretending to be working class.
Got a desk.
Because you think it
sitting
gives
at a
you
desk.
Some kind of street cred.
Yeah, because working class people can't work on the radio. Obviously.
No, I see, again, with a chip on the shoulder. You know,
you said it, not
Sean,
me.
Thank you. I didn't say
you
can't. Do. I said don't.
Do, no, you said.
I did
you,
not say
you
can't. I said
can't.
Don't.
No, because I said, do you think then the working class?
Well, have you thought of anybody yet who's working class?
Yeah, me. I keep telling you, me.
Apart from you.
Well, one's enough.
One is probably more than enough. In fact, in this particular case.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So if you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1 Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.